Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And now we're going to get the latest on the death of Eric Garner, age 43, after a confrontation with police on Staten Island last Thursday that left him dead. Garner was being arrested for illegally selling cigarettes. As he was being handcuffed, he was trying to pull free from what a video seems to reveal. And what was so disturbing to so many people was that he was immediately taken to the ground. Taken to the ground in a chokehold by the arresting officer. Garner repeatedly said, "I can't breathe," but the officers continued to use the chokehold. And the latest revelation, EMS did not reportedly try to revive him with CPR or anything else when they arrived on the scene, and Garner died. WNYC police reporter Kathleen Horan is among those tracking the story and the conversation about police use of force and chokeholds in particular that has broken out since. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Brian.
When we say chokehold, what exactly do we mean?
Just what you would think of, an arm around the neck and just really immobilizing someone by putting your arm around their neck and body.
The department's patrol guide prohibits chokeholds, as I understand it, which it defines as including, quote, any pressure to the throat or windpipe which may prevent or hinder breathing or reduce intake of air. That's a quote from the department's patrol guide. Is it clear? Has the department acknowledged, or just from your own reportorial viewing of the video, that it was a chokehold that would fit the definition by the NYPD?
They're investigating that. By all accounts, it really looks like a chokehold, which is why this officer who apparently did the chokehold, they took his badge and gun while it's being investigated, which is not what normally happens.
And so today, now that this has broken out into public view, there are news reports that the Civilian Complaint Review Board is going to look at over 1,000 complaints related to chokeholds over the past few years. Do you have any reporting on that? Could there have been 1,000 instances in just the last few years of something that's explicitly prohibited by police guidelines?
Well, that's the number of complaints that they've gotten over 5 years, and they're looking to see what the officers have said, why they would use a forbidden practice. Maybe they don't understand what is really forbidden. Maybe they think they're doing something that's actually sanctioned. And maybe there's something on the books versus what's practiced in the streets.
And according to the New York Times, in only 9 instances had the board discovered enough evidence to determine that a chokehold had been used. And in hundreds of other cases, not enough evidence was available to make a determination, according to the Civilian Complaint Review Board, or the investigation stalled when the person making the complaint could not be found or refused to cooperate. Of course, Mayor de Blasio just appointed a new head of the Civilian Complaint Review Board, someone who is expected to be much more hawkish than the people in the past, with the agency sometimes having the reputation of being a toothless tiger.
Richard Emery is the new chair of the CCRB. It's worth noting that only half of the reported cases were investigated. So half of those cases were investigated. And so I think they're still, that's why they're doing this study. They're really trying to wrap their arms around, is there a pattern in practice?
How do they only investigate half? Is there a responsibility on the part of the Civilian Complaint Review Board to investigate anything that's brought to their attention or anything that meets a certain standard that's brought to their attention? Do you know how that works?
You know, that's a really good question. They try to get to the bottom of all complaints, depending on their staffing and you know, what is going on. But from what they sent out, they investigated 462 cases, and they say fully investigated. A lot of times they say there's just not enough information, to go forward. So the person who reported the chokehold, maybe they couldn't contact them later, things like that.
Listeners, anything you want to say or ask about the death of Eric Garner and the issues that it raises, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for our police reporter, Kathleen Horan. The Police Benevolent Association, the union, is adamantly defending the officers involved, saying Mr. Garner was resisting arrest. I don't know if they're saying anything specifically about the chokehold. Are they?
They just said that it was an unwarranted knee-jerk reaction for the department to modify this officer, Pantaleo, I'm not sure if I'm saying his name right, to modify him to such a degree that he had to turn in his badge and his gun, and that they shouldn't prejudge the case. But the video is really damning, and it looks like Mayor de Blasio and Commissioner Bratton wanted to get out in front of that footage.
And I guess it has to be left as unclear, at least if the chokehold was the cause of death or a contributor to the death of Mr. Garner, who had several health issues, diabetes, sleep apnea, asthma so severe that he had to quit his job, it's been reported, with the City Parks Department. I don't know if it matters to the disposition with respect to the officer if he applied an illegal chokehold, whether it turns out to be the cause of death or not.
I don't know if it matters either, because this man's last moments were in agony, and he didn't have a weapon. He wasn't believed to be a dangerous character. No one who I talked to, and I talked to a number of people.
You talked to eyewitnesses, right?
Eyewitnesses and people that knew him just in the neighborhood and that knew him well. No one described him as a menace. He did sell illegal Lucy cigarettes, but he was a friendly, gentle guy by all accounts.
The only crime he was suspected of, right, was selling these untaxed cigarettes.
I saw one possibly assault on his record, but I don't know if it's something that wouldn't be very serious.
And as we've been hearing today, the latest wrinkle seems to be questions about the response by EMS. Four emergency responders have now been suspended, in addition to the actions taken against the police officers. And if the things that I'm hearing, that they arrived at the scene with Mr. Garner apparently unconscious, apparently in cardiac arrest, and they did not attempt to use CPR on him. Is that confirmed?
It is not confirmed, but eyewitnesses have confirmed it to me. And what you see on footage, both posted and some of the footage that I saw that people showed me in Staten Island, confirms that. And what's troubling is that not only how the arrest played out, but how he was treated once it was apparent that he was not well. Now, oftentimes in these cases, officers really oversee these scenes, and sometimes you hear that they don't let ambulances in or they don't let emergency workers treat suspects. Now, the ambulance was parked more than a block away, so it took a while for him to be put on the gurney, and then they had to wheel him a long walk away for what would be an emergency response.
Vernon on Staten Island, you're on WNYC. Hello, Vernon.
Hey, Brian. How are you doing? Right. I have to say, where this happened is within walking distance of my house. Tompkinsville is really close to St. George, where I live. There's a cafe there, the Everything Goes Cafe, that I frequent a lot. And I really would invite people to look at the video, because one thing that's not really clear, you have to see how Eric speaks to the cops. He is at no time threatening. He speaks to them. He doesn't curse at them. He doesn't go into a fighting stance. He speaks very respectfully to the police officers. He talks about the fact that they've been rousting him for nothing, often. And he apparently had been breaking up a fight. And what happens is that you see the officers starting to position themselves around Eric, and it's like the takedown of a prize animal. One of the problems that Eric had was that he was also a big man. And two of the officers that approach him are smaller in stature. So there's a whole other kind of male, macho, alpha dynamic that's going on. When they leap on him and the chokehold is applied, he says audibly three times, "I can't breathe." He says it audibly. The cell phone camera captures it. When he's choked out and he's laying there, the cops have no urgency. There's no urgency at all in attending to his medical needs. No one checks. It's unreal, the lack of concern and the contempt that the officers show this man, who speaks, he doesn't swing his arms. He's not threatening in any way. Now, this is particularly upsetting for me in that back in the 1980s, when I lived in Park Slope, Brooklyn, I was placed in a police chokehold in the lobby of the brownstone I was living in. And the only thing that saved my life, because I was on tippy toes, I couldn't breathe, one of the officers, it was a dispute over, I was lending a musician an amplifier, he was returning it to me, and it turned into a whole thing. The only thing that saved my life was the first responding officer found out that someone had stolen a boombox and not an amplifier. As the cop is got his forearm against my neck, against the wall, the first cop says, it was a boombox. And that's why I'm still here.
Because the boombox was not considered as serious a piece of equipment to steal as an amplifier.
Well, the thing is, the fellow that was bringing back the amp, it's a small guitar, he's bringing it back to me. The first car shows up, and they go into a whole thing about where'd that amp come from, and da 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 da, this, that, and the other thing. And I'm like, oh, I tell them the story. I lent this man, he's a piano player, I'm a guitar player, I lent him this amplifier for a gig. And he's listening to me, he's pretty reasonable. And then the second cops arrive. They jump out, burly men, they jump out, what's going on, blah, 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 blah. And the whole thing escalates when the next set of cops arrive. So we're in the hallway, they're firing questions, then the person returning amp gets upset, and he starts yelling at them. And then I realize, I had just bought this amp, and I had the receipt in the apartment. So I went, I'll just go get the receipt. And when I turned, that's when the forearm went on my neck.
Right.
That's when I wound up on tippy toes.
Sounds like a horrible experience. Can I ask you one other thing? It sounded like you might have known Mr. Garner personally, did you?
No, he was a character in the neighborhood. He was a big dude. To say he's the definition of gentle giant. I've never heard him curse. I've never heard him. It's an area where there's some people that are down at heel. You know, you have some people around there in the little park, but it's not like a high crime area. It's not like gang activity in that little park. That's not what goes on there.
Vernon, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much for your call. He talked about, quote, gentle giant and the size of Eric Garner. His weight was reported as about 350 pounds, and the caller just said the officers were smaller. I don't know if that becomes an aggregating factor, a mitigating factor in this case, if they had fear of a big man who they were trying to subdue. You know, this is where a racial element could come into, fear of a big black man. But has the PBA spoken about this? Cops on a 350-pound guy?
They haven't, but they should, because the cops appear to have had dealings with him before and he was well known in the neighborhood. He never exhibited violent behavior as far as anyone knows. And so you wonder why they didn't ask him to put his hands on the wall or why they didn't try to use their words first and instead of jump right on him. People in the neighborhood have said that uniformed cops are okay, but some of the plainclothes officers are prone to these split-second kind of jumps. And that's something that's worth looking into.
Maria in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Maria.
Good morning, Brian. I forgot what I was going to say, but, you know, after listening to the last caller. But one thing is, you know, the city is just running out of money. I believe that these officers should not be able, they should not be able to have a pension. That money should go to the victim. And in addition to that, no other union or local or whatever should ever supply them with a job. That's why we find some who misbehave are working in other areas like bus drivers, ambulance drivers, and what have you. Total scrutiny. When you do that, you don't need to be involved with people. Take his pension, take his house, and whatever. The city cannot keep paying this. This is ridiculous. And for the news to imply already he had a heart attack, come on. Look, we go through it every day. It's the wannabes are calling the police for every little thing, like the guy with the amp. Come on, ask questions first. You know, I'll be punitive first.
Maria, thank you very much. Is this going to wind up at a grand jury? We've been through so many of these things. Everybody can name the incident that sticks out in their mind where somebody died or was severely injured in a confrontation with police under questionable circumstances. There are sometimes indictments. There are so often acquittals. Is that the next step in this story or one of them?
This isn't going away. And the city officials have to show that it's more than just messaging about improving police-community relationships, that they're willing to take it to the limit when it comes to cases like this. Do you remember any case where a man's last moments were filmed during a police encounter?
No,
here in New York?
I don't. And I was going to raise that aspect of it too. We are in this era now where, after other incidents, controversial contacts between the police, and members of the public, sometimes that result in tragedy. People whip out their phones and start videoing when they see the police acting aggressively. And so here we are in this new era where there is, eyewitness or just bystander, really, video of the incident that I presume is going to wind up in court at some point.
It's the new normal. But what I'm curious about is why officers acted so brazenly and without compassion, apparently, when they knew people were filming them.
In fact, do you remember isn't it in the Floyd case, the lawsuit against the NYPD and Stop and Frisk, where one of the settlement terms imposed by the judge was that police in high Stop and Frisk precincts in each borough were going to have to start wearing video cameras on their lapels to record from that perspective their interactions with the public?
That's right. It was supposed to be a pilot program. Once the Floyd case gets through the appeal process, that is likely to happen.
Jeremy in Whippany, you're on WNYC. Hello, Jeremy.
Hey, how's it going, Brian?
All right.
I saw the video, and, it's odd because they make it, it's a 400-pound asthmatic man. So before clicking on the video, I didn't see what the guy looked like, and I thought it was going to be some, out-of-shape dude. This was a physically imposing, he could be an NFL lineman type of dude. The cops approached him for what they said. They saw him, witnessed him, saw the cigarette, and he refused to comply, and he was agitated. I'm not saying what they did was right, but as a police officer, what are you supposed to do when someone is not complying with a direct order? They told him, put your hands behind your back, and he said, no, this isn't happening anymore. This stops today.
Jeremy, thank you for that perspective. And from that perspective, it could be Rodney King all over again. Large man, yes, resisting on some level, being handcuffed and maybe beginning to thrash against the police officer's pressure. And at that point, depending on the jury, maybe public sympathy starts to go to the police officers.
They do have to make split-second decisions, but there was a number of police officers. It wasn't just this big man versus one officer. They were having a discussion. It wasn't someone who was believed to have a weapon. It wasn't for a serious crime. So it just leaves more questions that are worth following up on.
Right. And, again, I think there would be – it was an interesting aspect that I heard about on Friday, maybe you did too, related to this, is that apparently somebody from the law department was tweeting chokehold illegal, in New York City as the Bratton de Blasio press conference was going on, which if that's true, that's what somebody told me. And if that's true, it kind of, you know, sets the city up for a judgment here against them.
They were tweeting sort of like they didn't believe that it was actually illegal?
No, they were confirming that it was illegal.
Right.
Which, if true, again, this is what somebody told me who was looking at tweets. If that's true, that it turns out, you know, could wind up putting the city in an extra vulnerable position to be sued by the survivors of Eric Garner, or to wind up as, evidence in a prosecution against the police officers. That, again, regardless of the size of the individuals involved, police officers are supposed to have training and professional ways to take them down without killing them.
The city settles a huge number of lawsuits, these kinds of civil settlements, as you know. But the new oversight that is currently assembling to oversee the NYPD in form of the new inspector general, the new chair of the CCRB, you know, a monitor for the Floyd case, and on and on, you know, these are the kinds of things that they're going to look at.
One more call with a cultural and historical perspective. Noah and Yonkers, you're on WNYC. Hi, Noah.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm so shaken by this incident. The evening before, I read about this on the front page of the Times. I was showing my Romanian wife, who grew up in Romania, obviously, the Spike Lee's film, Do the Right Thing. And the end of the film, which is a masterpiece in my opinion, one of the main characters, Radio Rahim, who's a very imposing
big guy.
African-American big guy, who's actually sort of a gentle giant, if you look at the film, is subjected to a chokehold and actually dies in sort of the apex of the film. And I was explaining to my wife what it was like, growing up in the era of Howard Beach and living in integrated, you know, world back then and now, and how, telling her how far I felt we have come and stuff. And then the next morning I read about this and I was so shaken by it. And it just seems like, you know, we're so traumatized sometimes by these types of events. And, you know, I'd like to think this is an anomaly, but then I'm seeing that they're describing hundreds of cases that are being investigated. And, you know, it just seems like this violence was so disproportionate, the police action to the alleged crime of selling cigarettes. The area of the city that it occurred in seems to be a place which is so historically known to suffer these types of terrible, you know, race relations. I think the police knew this figure. He was kind of a well-known, street personality. And I'm just so shaken by the whole thing. I can't really describe to you how saddened I am by it, because it just feels like I'm back in the midst of the 80s again. I'm just very, very surprised and shocked by the whole thing.
I hear, Noah. Thank you very much for your call. And as we wrap this up, WNYC police reporter Kathleen Horan, there is a de Blasio policy context for this, which is that what Eric Garner was being arrested for in the first place, selling cigarettes, isn't it exactly the kind of low-level arrest that NYPD Commissioner Bratton is known for? And I don't know if this had declined in the Bloomberg years as they did stop and frisk and went down other roads, but these kinds of so-called broken windows arrest for minor things that are supposed to be preventative of larger crimes, such a flashpoint when it comes to community relations. Does it go to the heart of the Bratton approach?
Well, under Ray Kelly, there was plenty of low-level summonses and arrests. But with on the one hand, this sort of gentle, kinder messaging about caring and respect and repairing relationships. I'm doing a whole series looking at that relationship. Can it be improved or reset? But on the other hand, really still focusing aggressively on low-level infractions. It's almost like there's two different departments. And so you wonder, you know, can they connect the head and tail?
WNYC criminal justice reporter Kathleen Horan. Listeners, you can continue to post your thoughts about the death of Eric Garner to our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Kathleen, thank you. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More to come.